don't rest your head. Don't lie down upon your bed while the moon drifts in the skies. Stay awake. Don't close your eyes. Is fast asleep, though your pillow's soft and deep, you're not sleepy as you seem. Stay. Don't nod and dream. Stay awake. Don't nod and dream.
job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and snap the jobs again, and every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see that a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way. A robin feather in his nest has very little time to rest while gathering his bits of twine and twig. Though quite intent in his pursuit, he has a merry tune to toot. He knows a song will move the job along, for a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
Yeah. Gregory Connick Jr. wrapping up Mary Poppins Mock. Yes, Mary Poppins was released in the theaters in Los Angeles on this day back in 1964. So why not do a Mary Poppins Mock? If you didn't notice, each and every other song was from Mary Poppins. And then the other songs in between mentioned Mary Poppins. That's how it worked. That was the mock. That Harry Connick Jr., yeah, that was him doing his own New Orleans-style jazz version of Spoonful of Sugar. What else was in that set of music? Well, before the Harry Connick Jr., some Circle Jerks went back to Oddities for their song Career Day, because that name dropped Mary Poppins. Vandals in there. Vandals doing their version of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. A title and a song I can barely say once. Try saying it twice fast, or three times, or sing it like the Vandals did very well. Also played the Wombats in there. Wombats doing Lost in the Post. Suzanne Vega giving us her version of Stay Awake. Weezer went back to the Black Album from Weezer for Too Many Thoughts in My Head. Again, more Mary Poppins name dropping. Garth Hudson gave us that instrumental version of the song Feed the Birds. Pulled that off of a soundtrack, or a compilation actually, called Stay Awake, which was various interpretations of Disney, vintage Disney films that came out back in the late 80s. I'm just mentioning it because, A, it's a fun compilation. You've got the Replacements, Los Lobos, you've got Bill Frisell on it. You even have Ringo Starr. So it's a diverse mix, produced by Hal Wilner. Now, I mention this because we lost Hal a year ago, and I believe we did lose him to COVID, but he put that compilation together, and I just, you know, we're playing it for you, Hal. We are playing it for you, the listener, as well. Before the Garth Hudson, how about some Vic Chestnut, the late Vic Chestnut? Old Hotel off of his Salesman and Bernadette release. And start off the entire set with Joe Pernice. Joe Pernice doing his version of Chim Chim Tree. So that was a Mary Poppins mock. If you have a suggestion for a mock, drop me an email. If you have a suggestion for a song, drop me an email. My email address is wrctrequest@gmail.com. You know, we've got about 27 and a half minutes before we get to the top of the hour and the program ends, so I'm going to cram in. I'm not sure it's a bunch of songs, because there's a lot of long songs I want to play, but I have a very special feature for the last half hour of this program, because we've moved into the next day. The next day marks the anniversary of, I'll tell you right after this.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
So you're asking yourself, Mockster, what is this anniversary you are speaking of? I'm actually speaking of the anniversary of the birth of Leon Theremin. He was a Russian-Soviet electronic musical instruments inventor. He was born in St. Petersburg, Russia, back in 1896 on this day. He passed away at the age of 97 years old back in 1993. So I am honoring Leon Theremin by taking the very next 30 minutes of this program on the anniversary of his birth to play songs that all feature a theremin. That's what I'm doing. And why not start with a classic that probably put Theremin on the map?
I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air,
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I'm picking up good vibrations, she's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations, she's giving me
vibrations a half man with her. Gotta keep those love good vibrations a half man.
Flaming Lips. Flaming Lips from the Soft Bulletin album, wrapping up that set of music, which all featured one instrument. Well, it featured a whole bunch of instruments, and they probably all had guitars and all the good like stuff like that and drums. But I'm saying they all featured the theremin. Yeah, the theremin. Leon Theremin, born on this day in 1896, the inventor of the theremin. So I played a bunch of tracks for you that all featured the theremin. Gomez before that, Shot with the name of the track, went back. Yeah, people are like, Moxter, where's your tribute to Charlie Watts? And I'm like, well, I did play a small Stones tribute a few hours ago, which included like a Stones cover, even an official cover. But I hadn't played a Stones song. There was my Stones song. Yeah, I played Please Go Home featuring the theremin on that track. Pixies in there gave us Valoria. Also some Polyphonic Spree with Light and Day. Reach for the Sun from the Beginning Stages of album. And started things off with the Beach Boys. Yeah. You're thinking, you know, Moxter, I guess I have heard the theremin in songs, and I just didn't know what it was. So I wanted to pay tribute to Leon Theremin in the anniversary of his birth. Hey, you know what I should tell you? Well, I've still got about a minute and a half. Well, I got about 5 minutes, but I have one more song for you. And then my night's over. Then my day's over. Then my show is over. That's what's over. I knew something was over. I'm over. Got to remind you that the Westmoreland Cleanways and Recycling, located about 40 minutes outside of Pittsburgh in Greensburg, has received a grant to expand its facility to process any and all types of foam mark number 6. That's clean plates, bowls, clamshells, egg cartons, trays, even that block protective packaging foam that you get when you buy like electronics and furniture, that's included. The grant has been made possible through the Foam Recycling Coalition. You can bring your foam to the drop-off center at 355 Pleasant Unity Mutual Road out in Greensburg. For more information, 724-879-4020 or visit westmorelandcleanways.com. O-R-G. Yeah, I got a couple more things to tell you, and then I've got this last song to get to you. A couple more things. For example, the American Red Cross wants you and your family to be prepared for an emergency. You can download any of their free mobile apps and have critical information on what to do in an emergency right there in the palm of your hand. The apps include first aid, hurricane, earthquake, tornado, and wildfire. Find them by searching Red Cross in the Apple iTunes or Google Play stores. This message brought to you by the American Red Cross and your good friends here at WRCT. I got one more song in my theremin set, because I was like, you know, Moxter, you'd be remiss if you did not include one of the many bands that feature a theremin. And you're like, many bands? Lots of bands. Lots of Pittsburgh bands, I should say. So let's go to Pittsburgh's own Gothies and their take on Daily Nightly. My last song of the night. Thank you so much for tuning in. Sometimes.
is WRCT Pittsburgh.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio. This is In Black America.
We tend to have an idea and want to do the business cards and set up a website right away and then say we're in business, right? And especially with social media, everybody is an influencer type of thing. We don't take enough time to truly understand the problem that we're solving and discovering the customer and to whom we're solving that problem for. All successful businesses solve a void in the marketplace, and we have to understand that. And that's a process of taking the time before you even start writing that business plan. You have to understand and do your customer discovery, problem discovery. Is the problem I think I'm helping with this particular business indeed the problem? And who are my customers?
Dr. Tiffany Bussey, founding director of the Morehouse Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center. As director of the Morehouse Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center, Bussey managed planned teams of faculty, staff, and consultants to achieve the goal of the center, which is to assist in the development of minority entrepreneurship through scholarly research, training, and consulting services. She's also an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at Morehouse College. Under her leadership, this transformational program has been instrumental in generating millions of dollars in revenue for small African-American and underrepresented businesses in Atlanta. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Morehouse Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center with Dr. Tiffany Bussey. In Black America.
Like I mentioned, we started off with primarily work in the DoD Mentor Protege program. And then we had the awesome opportunity to write for a significant grant with JP Morgan Chase, who has been one of our early supporters of this work. And at the time, like any small business, we were asked to find something that the market currently wasn't offering. And so we started with helping startup businesses. I would call it industry agnostic. It wasn't focused, but just to help businesses start. At the time in Atlanta, there were very few other organizations focusing on helping Black founders start businesses. So that's where we started in terms of the community work that we were doing. We have evolved. We are now focused on construction as far as the industry pillar. Healthcare is another one for us, and information technology. I would also say that we're currently looking at sustainability and climate change as another focus area, again, given, you know, you're constantly doing that search, that strategic search, where are the gaps in the marketplace, and that's where it's leading us to right now.
Dr. Tiffany Bussey has over 20 years' experience in various aspects of business management for corporate, small business, educational, and nonprofit organizations. Formed in 2004 as a unit of Morehouse College, the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center has continually operated with an internal and external focus to promote innovation and entrepreneurship with people of color. The center's program has changed the lives of generational families in the community and introduced the possibility of generational wealth where there was none. The secret to their success lies in comprehensive formula they developed, guiding these businesses through every aspect of the process, including securing capital. To date, the center has reached 2,100 students, impacted over 400 small businesses, and created 850 new jobs. Recently, In Black America spoke with founding director Dr. Tiffany Bussey.
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I was born in Belize, Central America, and just had the fortunate time of spending some time there in the last couple of weeks. So grew up in Belize all the way through high school and then came to the United States to attend college. I have gone to the College of St. Elizabeth in New Jersey and had a really awesome experience, started my first year careers in New York, and then kind of moved up the East Coast to Washington, D.C., where I met my husband, and now in Atlanta, Georgia, for the past 32 years.
You majored in economics in college?
I sure did, and I still believe it's one of the fundamentals that everyone should understand because it tells you so much about how the whole business model and this experience that we're doing with capitalism works. And so, yes, that was my first go-to in understanding this model.
Prior to you going to Morehouse, what were your other occupations?
Sure. So I think anyone doing economics and really being ambitious, I just knew that I would love Wall Street, and that was my goal. And so indeed, right after undergrad, I spent a few years with Merrill Lynch, getting my, as they would say, get your teeth into understanding the stock market, but it was not for me. And so I had the most fortunate opportunity of then going to Washington, D.C., and I got the bug at that time with federal contracting, worked for a small 80 company that really showed me how to grow, and seeing people that look like me starting businesses, being part of the 8A program, really doing well, and selling companies and starting companies. And I, from there, I was hooked with small business, truly understanding how to help them grow and scale. Like I shared, I was fortunate enough to then move to Atlanta, Georgia, and could not find work in the federal space. So I'm one of those accidental kind of career person in terms of entrepreneurship. Was not my goal to be in this role of what I call an entrepreneur activator or assisting folks to become entrepreneurs. So I had to become one myself. I started a consulting firm helping people to write grants and understand the federal market space. In my first job, or kind of running with HBCUs, but with Morris Brown College at the time, helping them to organize a contract, not a grant, but a contract that was given to Morris Brown and understanding how that works. And so, as they said, the rest was history. We developed a program around that work at Morris Brown, really helping HBCUs understand how to run a business of doing contract work. I think academic institutions understand how to do grant work very well, but the contract side of things is a little bit different. And we developed a what was then called the Morris Brown Research Institute, and went on to have a body of work. Morris Brown ran into some of the accreditation problems that they had, and we had to find a new home. And so I shopped that. Fortunate for me, I'm in Atlanta, that has the largest consortium of HBCUs, and literally across the street went to Spelman, who welcomed me in the program there, and was there for quite some time, and then ended up across the street at Morehouse, where I've been for the past 20 years, really running what I would call a business construct of understanding how to help businesses run businesses within the construct of the academic institution.
Before we get into the center, I caught the economic bug while in high school, which was an elective. Why do you think economics should be mandatory for our young people today?
Sure. So a lot of what we understand, especially from, so economics is split into sort of like two sides of the coin. There's the macro side, which helps you understand the total big picture. How does the economy run? What are the elements that feeds into it to make banking run and to understand the movement of money and interest rates, which drives everything? And then the microeconomic side of things really get to the firm level. How do you run a firm and understand economies of scale and those types of things? And when you look at the basics of running any business, or I would say any transaction, whether it is for starting a business or even running your own household, it comes back to those elements that you get and really discover from a macro and at a micro level in economics. So I do think the basics of understanding how money works, because everything flows from money, is essential. I would definitely encourage anyone to understand, even if it's your own private household, how do I manage that? How does taxation work? Because you are going to pay taxes, and that's the system that everything is based on. So from that perspective, highly, highly encourage it. We're learning more that the earlier students and everyone understand that, the better it is to understand the flow of everything else that runs and making decisions on your career, quite frankly.
You started the Innovation and Entrepreneur Center in 2004. Why so?
So, like I shared, we had this body of work that was being shopped around, really started from Morris Brown and then ended up at Spelman for a few years. And in that discussion, the work at that time was really centered around HBCU's involvement in federal contracting. I was involved in recruiting faculty members and students to be engaged with federal contract work. And I had a discussion at the time then with the dean of the business school at Morehouse, Dean John Williams, and I shared with him what this work was about. And he said, tell me that again, that you could actually do this work through the institution and have the model, everything above cost comes back to the institution to run a center that students can then learn how to start businesses. And I guess with his vision, he welcomed it. At the time, Morehouse was considering starting a center focused on students understanding not only how to graduate with a degree, but how do you understand how to start a business, not only look for a job, but create jobs through businesses, right? And as I explained it to Dean Williams at the time, I said, we can actually bring this program over to Morehouse, start a center with no money from the institution, but from the monies that would be created through this program. And he said, makes good business sense to me. And that's how that all started and created at Morehouse. We did contract work through the Department of Defense Mentor Protege Program, where Morehouse and other HBCUs support larger organizations such as your IBMs or your Lockheed in helping them getting small business to become part of their supply chain. We provide that mentoring and part of the, to these what they call protege teams at the time, and through using students and faculty. And that's how that all started and has grown. I am pleased to say that 20 years into this, we have done over $82 million in contract work through the center in helping small businesses grow, touched over 400 small businesses and really helped them to grow and scale and help them create over 850 new jobs. That is significant. That's a goal. That's what we're doing. I like to say the mission is to help start, scale, and grow Black businesses, quite frankly, because of who we are at Morehouse.
Are there any particular businesses that you all focus on?
So for us, this is our business, right? I usually also start off and say that I am entrepreneurial also because this is my entrepreneurial venture or the team's entrepreneurial venture. And so we learned a lot. Like I mentioned, we started off with primarily work in the DoD Mentor Protege Program. And then we had the awesome opportunity to write for a significant grant with JP Morgan Chase, who has been one of our early supporters of this work. And at the time, like any small business, we were asked to find something that the market currently wasn't offering. And so we started with helping startup businesses. I would call it industry agnostic. It wasn't focused, but just to help businesses start. At the time in Atlanta, there were very few other organizations focusing on helping Black founders start businesses. So that's where we started in terms of the community work that we were doing. We have evolved. We are now focused on construction as far as the industry pillar. Healthcare is another one for us. And information technology. I would also say that we're currently looking at sustainability and climate change as another focus area, again, given, you know, you're constantly doing that search, that strategic search, where are the gaps in the marketplace, and that's where it's leading us to right now. I would also share that as we pivot away from startups, we are now fully focused on what we call mid-sized firms, helping firms to really grow and scale. They're generally over $2 million in annual revenues, have been in business about 3 to 5 years. Those are the businesses that we have decided to really focus our energy in helping them grow and scale. A lot of what is said in terms of entrepreneurship as the magic bullet in helping closing the racial wealth gap in this country using entrepreneurship doesn't focus on these mid-sized firms. And what we know from the data is that it's these mid-sized firms that exponentially change that ratio, right? Provide employment, add use capital. Those are the firms. And so that's one of the reasons why we're now focused on that. And of course, on the flip side, we also work with our students. We've stood up a minor in entrepreneurship at Morehouse and really work with our students to understand if they are not entrepreneurs when they leave and graduate, at least they have the fundamentals and what it means to be an entrepreneur later on in their careers.
I understand. This is In Black America. We'll be back with more of our conversation in a moment.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Dr. Tiffany Bussey, the founding director of the Morehouse College Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center. Dr. Bussey, what is your definition of a small business?
For me, a small business is one that has a particular product or service in mind already. And I will also offer the definition a little bit different as comparing it to a startup. So a startup is one that has an idea, has what we call in academic language a hypothesis. I think this is something I should offer. And they're searching for that business model, searching to find out, is this indeed the product that needs to be there? A small business, however, has already found that. They have that product. I am selling 10 widgets, or I'm selling caps, I'm selling shirts. They have that, and they have opened their business, and they're selling that product, really driving revenue. They have a set business model. They have a revenue structure that they are going at, and they're no longer searching. They may iterate, but they're very much set. So you would see those small businesses open for business, whether it is, and again, the definition in terms of size varies so widely. And John, I will tell you that perhaps it is that wide definition of a small business that perhaps creates some of the issues that we have in even growing them. If you go to the SBA, the Small Business Administration definition of it, it could go anywhere in terms of revenue from 100,000 to well over 100 million in revenue, right? Depending on the classification and what it is that you're selling. So I like to say that it is not what you're selling or the number of revenues or the number of employees that defines a small business, but it is how they're doing it. What is the business model? Have they already found the business model that they are executing? That makes them a small business. If you're still searching, you're probably in a startup stage of a business. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Are individuals coming to you prior to starting a business and or they are already in business?
As I shared, when we first started, our programs were pretty much focused on startups. So those were those that think they had an idea. I'm exploring this. I want to start this. In the early stages, I would say perhaps the first 10 years of the center's existence. Now, in the past 10 years, we are now fully focused on what we call a cohort model. So it is only at the time of application that we invite folks to engage with us. Very specific to the industry. What we have found, again, because we're intentionally focused on scaling these businesses, is that if we work with what we call opportunity partners, which are usually your large corporations, such as your IBMs, your large general contracting companies, such as Holder or, you know, if we work directly with them to understand what it takes to grow a small business and have them a part of their supply chain, they're partnered with us and we bring companies in specifically that can meet those opportunities.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we confront the challenges of censorship and freedom of speech in America.
Our guest today is Robert Korn Revere, one of the nation's preeminent First Amendment attorneys. He's now chief counsel for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. We also take a deep dive into the growing crisis of homelessness in the United States. As cities across the nation ramp up crackdowns, we examine the harsh realities faced by the unhoused. We speak with John Raefling from Human Rights Watch about his recent report on houselessness and its impact on human rights. Stay with us. I'm Heidi Boghossian, New York City attorney and activist.
I'm Stephen Rohde, retired civil rights lawyer and author on issues of civil liberties. Americans have a love-hate relationship with freedom of speech. They love to protect their own free speech, and they hate to protect the free speech of those they disagree with. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was intended to protect freedom of speech and freedom of the press, yet throughout American history, governments at all levels have censored speech and tried to muzzle the press. The anti-censorship group PEN America in a survey of the 2022-23 school year, found that, quote, freedom to read is under assault in the United States, particularly in public schools, curtailing students' freedom to explore words, ideas, and books, unquote. Authors whose books are targeted are most frequently female, people of color, and or LGBTQ plus individuals. According to the American Library Association, the number of titles targeted for censorship surged 65% in 2023 compared to 2022, reaching the highest levels it has ever documented. According to Deborah Caldwell Stone, director of the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom, quote, each demand to ban a book is a demand to deny each person's constitutionally protected right to choose and read books that raise important issues and lift up the voices of those who are often silenced, unquote. To help us assess freedom of speech in America today, we've invited one of the most prominent First Amendment lawyers in the United States. Robert Kornrevere is chief counsel for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, known as FIRE. He has practiced First Amendment law for 40 years. From 1989 to 94, Kornrevere served as legal advisor and later chief counsel to the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Kornrevere is a prominent writer, thinker, and advocate on free expression issues and is regularly listed as a leading First Amendment and media lawyer by various national publications. He co-authored the three-volume treatise, Modern Communications Law. And in 2021, Cambridge University published his book, The Mind of the Censor and the Eye of the Beholder, The First Amendment and the Censor's Dilemma, which explores how free expression became a part of America's identity. I reviewed The Mind of the Censor for the Los Angeles Review of Books and called it an entertaining, enlightening, and timely book. Robert Kornrevere, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Steve, it's a pleasure to be joining you and a thrill to be on Pacifica Radio.
Thank you. Let's start off broadly. What are the most significant threats to freedom of speech in the United States?